This is the interview of Bessie Rosenberg Katz on July 16, 1974, by Sarah Lefkowitz and Ida Kaplan for Oral History 2. Bessie, if you will start by giving us some information about your mother and father, their backgrounds, their education.
During lunch, I began to relate to you something about my parents, their early background. Both were born in Russia, Poland, in a small city on the Vistula, V-I-S-T-U-L-A, river near Warsaw. My father attended school there and was presented the Pushkin literary works upon his completion of schooling for his scholarship. He later left for Antwerp, Belgium, to learn the trade of diamond cutting. His parents settled at this time in London, England, with another son, his brother. My paternal grandfather was a jeweler, as well as my father's brother. And so my father followed in the same trade and business. My mother came to England in her early teens. She had not yet completed gymnasia when she arrived in London. Yes, both parents grew up in London and met in their early 20s, I think about 21 or 22, 21. They were married in England in the famous Duke Synagogue. You want that? In 1903. My parents lived in London for a short time and then moved to Wales, where my father opened a jewelry store. I was born in Wales in a small industrial city known as Ebbwale.
Would you spell that, please?
EBW, capital WALE, hyphen between Ebba and Whale. Coal mining was the main industry here. The family lived here for a short time and then moved back to London.
Bessie, is this your father and mother with
yes.
or without children?
I was.
You
yes,
were,
and Sidney.
And
yes.
He also was.
Yeah. Both parents were English speaking, so that when we came to the United States, I was a very young child, I think about 4 years old. Their delightful English accent was an asset in being quickly accepted into the community. My father, of course, was a jeweler, established a jewelry store and a watchmaker.
Where was that?
In South Fork, Pennsylvania, near Johnstown, site of the famous flood, the Johnstown flood.
1898?
Yeah, that was before we were there. During this very early period, something I didn't write. What was the last thing I said?
I'll play it back now, if you want to continue.
We became, of course, acquainted with the people of the community, made up mainly, chiefly, I should say, of coal miners. My father was frequently consulted by the officials of the coal mining union, United Mine Workers, which branch at this time was considered one of the strongest in the area. And they would consult with him about various issues. He was always very sympathetic to the problems of the coal miner, having been exposed to them in Wales. During this period, I was frequently in our store, and my father would have me come in and listen to these conversations. I would sit in the back of the silver floor cases, which had deep drawers, and my father would place me in the drawer, and I would overhear this conversation and really become indoctrinated. He was quite liberal for his day and age, and I've always been grateful for that experience. Later, when the three of us were old enough, and my sister Florence, who was then an infant, born in South Fork, I didn't mention that my sister Lillian was also born in England, came across with us, with Mother and Sydney, myself, an infant of 8 months, I believe. Papa had come ahead to the States and had been here 1 year when the family joined him. I want to tell you a little anecdote. Early age, as all children, we developed one of the childhood diseases, namely whooping cough. And although neither parent believed in doing this, yet they thought they couldn't ignore it, inasmuch as all four of us, even our infant sister Florence, had it. And Mother got it from her. So we went into a coal mine. There was a legend that if you go into a coal mine and they explode the dynamite, that has a healing effect.
How interesting.
So my father again took us all on one of those mining cars and made arrangements with a coal mining company. They never do that, you know. And they agreed to take us in. Now, I can remember that very vividly, seeing the miners get their dynamite sticks ready and watching them with their picks, digging the coal and lying on their backs, you know how they do. And the impression that things like that can make on children is just beyond description, as I'm sure you're aware of.
It's a lifelong influence.
Yes, it has never left me. And so that was my first experience with the coal mines. I don't think I ever went back into them, but naturally was always exposed to some of it through our customers. Later, when my father became the first Victor Victrola dealer in that area, as well as an Edison dealer, phonograph dealer, new influences came into our lives, which meant a lot living in a small town. It opened the world of great artists to us, and we would have concerts given by these artists in together with the phonograph to show how well their voices were recorded. And these artists would come to our small town, and naturally they were guests in our home for dinner. And this was a great thing for us because, again, I say, a small town, and we were with these people, and both my parents had attended a lot of concerts and things of that kind in London, and so it was just great. When I reached the age of about 13, I think, I was in high school, I had the job of cataloging the Red Seal record department of my father's store.
Red Seal is?
The fine artists such as Caruso, Tetrazzini, Melba, all those great artists of that day. And before I did it, I remember I would sit glued to the opera books that we would get about these artists in order to have some idea of whom I was cataloging.
Where did you get the books?
My father got them.
He got them as a distributor.
Yes.
I see.
Yes. I'm talking a lot about my father at this point, but believe me, my mother was as great an influence in another way.
We'll want to hear about
that. My mother participated in the business as well. In fact, the story was that when Papa wanted to go into this new business, when he was approached by a Victor representative, he said absolutely he couldn't go into it because it required too much capital at that point. And he was fairly young in this community as far as business and so forth. And he was ready to say no. This is a little intimate story, too. My mother started to smile. She said, "You can go into it." He said, "I can't. I don't have the capital that it requires." And she said, "Yes, you do. I have it." She used to put away, because Papa was inclined in the jewelry business to overbuy. So she would always be a check on him in buying, and also she would put money away into a savings account and gradually built up this capital.
So that he was able
then. He was able very nicely to go into it. And this was a very successful business. It later branched out into the entire area of the small towns around us, as well as Johnstown. Now, we all helped in the business. It was an interesting experience, and we loved it. It was a family experience. And I've always been happy that I had the kind of business experience, though limited, that I had, because as a wife, I had a more sheltered existence because my husband was a professional man, a lawyer, and naturally I didn't have the same kind of experience. And it stood me in good stead later on in life when my husband passed away quite early.
Now, can we have a little more about your early religious upbringing? You discussed the cultural and economic and the disciplines. The disciplines would be very interesting.
Such
your
as?
The disciplines in your home.
Oh, yes. Our home life was very rich. Our maternal grandmother also lived with us. She left England when we left and joined us. As I said, we had a happy home life with many visitors from out of town, which added a new dimension always to our lives.
What was your relationship with the non-Jewish community?
I'll come to that, yeah. My parents were very friendly with the non-Jewish population, and as I indicated earlier in the interview, were very much accepted. When any subject regarding religion was brought up, or perhaps not understood, or certain facets of prejudice began to become evident in the lives of some of our Jewish friends in the community, my father would step in, and also my mother quite frequently. And the ministers, the priests, came to them for enlightenment on these problems. Later, I want to come to the rabbi now. It was important that we have some religious training, and again, contact had to be made with religious leaders. Again, my father stepped in, made contact with Dr. Leonard Levy of Road of Shalom, came to Pittsburgh and arranged for teachers to come on Sundays to our town. This went on for a year or more, but because of the distance, it failed and had to be canceled. Following this, the 9 or 10 families in our community got together, and a rabbi was brought to our town, of course, together with his family. He was a young man, and the children liked him very much. I was the only girl in the Hebrew class. My mother was a feminist, really. And I think that's where a lot of these...
women's lib.
Yes, she really was. And I went to Hebrew school together with my brother, and we continued that for several years until the rabbi said, "Now I've discharged my duty to you, to your community here, and now I must leave. I want to go to a larger community." And so that gave us our foundation as far as religious education. I ought to add this, that when I was very young, I can remember vividly, before we had any religious training, going out on Sunday mornings with my father. He would pack, my mother would pack a lunch. He would take us out into the woods in our outside of our town and tell us biblical stories. And he was a great lover of nature. He would whistle to the birds. And we had a great time, only Sydney and I then.
You were getting an education,
yes,
as well.
Yes, it was a beautiful experience. Our family life, we, of course, observed the holidays, and naturally that gives children a certain background.
Bessie, how about the kashrut?
We practiced it, but not too seriously. Even my grandmother was not too serious about it. I can remember her telling a story about her home in Poland when my mother was a very little girl. My mother also had only one brother, both small families, mother and father had. My grandmother, my maternal grandmother, told us that she had a Polish maid for many years, the same maid, and she lived very far from her home because my grandmother lived in the city and she was from the country. So when Christmas time came, this girl couldn't go home. It was too far for her. So my grandmother would buy a Christmas tree, set it up in her bedroom, in the maid's bedroom, and let her trim it, and let her celebrate the way she wanted to, which I think was a rather...
Very liberal.
Yes. So as far as the kashrus, I said that we did observe it, but there were many slips, as I recall. And Papa used to say, when these laws were made regarding kashrus, we must remember that they had wooden dishes and they absorbed the fats and so forth. And therefore, now with the china, we don't have that problem. And he couldn't see the need for it. I think that if he had been the woman of the house, there would have been even less of what was practiced and had been. You see what I mean?
Yes, of course.
So that gives you a picture of that. I guess you think I'm a terrible person to tell these things.
I think it makes it very interesting, don't you? I think at this point it might be interesting to hear about your education as a young child in South Fork, other than the Hebrew school.
One other thing that I wanted to say. I think there's that. In speaking about our about grandparents, I did want to tell you that when I went to Europe in 1958, for the first time, returned to England, and when I went to the area of the Thames where the drawbridges are, the picture of myself with my paternal grandfather, Aunt Sydney, came back so vividly to me because as children, and particularly after Papa left for the United States, my grandfather would come every Saturday following services in the synagogue. And he was a very handsome, tall man, and would wear the English style for the Sabbath of a long coat, striped pants, and the stovepipe, you know. And he cut such a beautiful figure, and he would come for us. And he was a very dear, affectionate kind of person. And we would walk along the Thames, and I'd want, at that time, seeing these bridges opening up, you know, it was just breathtaking. And I never thought of it again, apparently, but when I came there, it all came back to me so graphically. I'll never forget that emotion that I experienced then. Now that's enough of that. Now, coming back to what you ask about education in generally,
the public school system.
In the public school system. We, of course, had our elementary grades and our high schools. I went through the grades. I wanted to skip, as I used to put that in parentheses, and my mother came to the school to have a discussion with the main teacher and the principal and ask that they do not let me skip. I was very upset about it, but she felt that I was helping with the children, even though my grandmother was there and we always had good help in our house, but somehow Mama felt that I had a sense of responsibility, and she didn't want me to be burdened too much by taking on more than I could handle. And although the teachers thought I could, both parents felt that they did not want me to undertake skipping. So I didn't.
They were very enlightened.
Oh, you have no idea. When I think back of some of the things that they did in there, it's hard to believe. And so I went on to high school. In high school, my freshman year, I became very interested in debating. And this is where I believe my mother's influence was a pronounced one. She had cousins, first cousins, women, who both became professional women. One a professor of zoology at the Sorbonne in France, and the other a medical doctor in France. They had both gone to the Sorbonne. And this, and Mother had planned to do the same thing, but her life was changed by their coming to England, and she didn't go on with it. She hoped that I, who began to show a great interest in debating, would go into law. And that was my early intention. I enjoyed very much debating and also dramatics. Do you want to know about the high school play? Is that too much to tell you? Sydney and I graduated together. Do you want to know about our honors or anything like that? I don't want to sound too much valedictorian. I, coming from the same family, was advised that they couldn't give salutatorian to me. It was a disappointment, but I accepted it. I was happy that Sydney had that. And I was one of the honor students. And of course, we gave our speeches. And then already, I began to show an interest in social problems. And my subject for my high school speech, graduation speech, was the plight of the rural schools, which I developed as I understood it. During my high school years, I particularly liked the field of English and also social studies even more.
Did you make friends in high school you retained?
I still write to one of them, a non-Jewish girl who lives in Johnstown.
Did you have teachers who made an impact?
Oh, yes, very much.
In high school?
Yes. Is this going on?
Yes.
Yes, very much so. One was our instructor in social studies, particularly, made on me a great impact. My brother liked the sciences very much, but I went for this. And so I continued my interest in the social studies and thought of that in terms of pre-legal preparation. However, upon graduation, I decided I wanted to go to Columbia University and study journalism and have that as a basis and then go into law school. What happened was that my brother decided to go to the University of Pittsburgh because of its very fine medical school. And he very early decided that he wanted to become a surgeon. Now, I don't think you want me to go.
Why didn't you go to Columbia, Bessie?
My brother decided to go to the University of Pittsburgh because it had such a fine medical course, school, rather. And my parents said they would like very much to see us both go away together and be in the same city. We didn't stay at the same place. My brother, by the way, because Sydney was going there, I also went to the university, was admitted to the University of Pittsburgh. And I didn't care to take journalism there. I didn't feel it was the course I wanted. And so I started into the liberal arts course and actually had a major in social studies, particularly in the field of economics. I had one professor who had a great influence on me. That was Dr. Francis Tyson, who was then considered quite liberal. Though later, he seemed to be a much more conservative teacher as the times change.
What did he teach?
Economics.
Economics.
I entered every course. I took every course that he gave at Pitt at that time. I graduated ahead of my class because I had enough credits I couldn't see staying in school any longer. However, I couldn't enter law school at that time because the law classes began in September, and this was February, law classes at Pitt. So I was going to go on a trip. It was a graduation gift. When Dr. Tyson called me, and he said, "Bessie, I want you to go down and be interviewed for a job at the Jewish Family Welfare." I answered, "I'm going away, Dr. Tyson." He said, "You can go away later." And go down there. He said, "They've interviewed about 8 girls now, and I don't know if you'll get it or not, but," he said, "my wife, Mrs. Helen Tyson, is giving a seminar there, and she told me about this." So, always wanting to please my professor and favorite teacher, I decided to go. And I was employed immediately, which I wasn't too delighted about at the time, but I did it. And I became a caseworker because of my background in social studies. It was before the time that they required other training. I liked the work very much. And I went on with this in the family casework department. And that early summer, I met my husband.
How?
I was invited to a house party, a housewarming party of some friends, who turned out to be a friend of my husband's, too, friends of my husband's. And I went, and all through the evening I felt someone was watching every move I made and tried to ignore it. But I was aware, and at that time I was enjoying the company of some other very interesting young men, and I wouldn't allow myself to think too much about this. But I did have a premonition about it, that this was going to be it. And I enjoyed my work and had some very interesting colleagues. I attended my first professional convention at this time, going to Cleveland to the first national conference on social work. Not Jewish social work, but social work, generally.
General.
It was an inspiring experience for me. And although I was still thinking of law, I began to realize I was becoming more interested in this field and tried not to. However, I came back and went on with my work, and enrolled in seminars dealing with social work practices and social work education in general. As the school year was approaching, I spoke with Dr. Bernstein. What's his first name?
L.B.
Yeah, Ludwig B. Bernstein, who was then head of the Jewish Philanthropies of Pittsburgh. I had a very pleasant conversation with him about attending law school, pointing out that I could go to law school half a day, either morning or afternoon, as
this is the end of side one of the Bessie Rosenberg Katz tape. Resumes on the second side.